When we read about Jesus, we discover that anyone who encountered him never stayed the same. When someone's perception of who God was collided with the reality of Jesus, everything changed. That's what collisions do. They change things. This day holds the potential for a collision. Maybe you're here out of obligation. Maybe you just couldn't say no to the person who invited you. Maybe you couldn't wait to get here. But no matter who you are or where you came from, and regardless of how you got here, the truth is, you're about to experience a collision. It's no accident that you're here today. From the beginning of time, God planned this day, this place, this moment for you. And his plan all along was for your life to collide with his. Today, your perception will meet his reality head on. Will you see it, embrace it, and be changed by it? Strap yourself in. Open up your heart. You're about to experience the kind of collision that changes everything. That's why he came. That's why he died. That's why he rose again. And that's why you're here.
It was about this time last year, on a Sunday morning in November, the weather was, as it is this time of the year, going back and forth between cold and warm throughout the day. But this time it was in the morning, and I was on my way to church. We live up near Costco off of Jonestown Road in Harrisburg, and we attend church normally down at Still Meadow in York. And I was driving down early this particular morning because I was playing in the band on the praise team that day. Had my guitar in the back seat, driving down the road, minding my own business, heading down Interstate 83 south of Harrisburg on my way to York. And I watched the temperature. It was raining off and on, and I was watching the temperature that day as I'm driving in my truck. And I realized that the temperature was about 34 degrees. And if you know anything about 34 degrees, that's getting pretty close to that magical number of 32 degrees. But that's air temperature, not road temperature. And as I'm driving along, I look down. I'm in the passing lane just before exit 36 in the southbound lane of 83. I'm in the passing lane, getting ready to pass a car. And all of a sudden, I look down at my temperature gauge in my truck. It immediately goes from 34. It just doesn't go down numerically. It just skips 31. And I thought, this is not good. And as soon as I saw that, had that thought, I eased off of the accelerator. And at that very moment, my truck started to slide. I hit some black ice. Now, I drive a Ram 1500, 6,500 pounds of hard, cold steel began to go not continue down that passing lane, but across the driving lane into the exit lane, at which point the wheels caught something and began to spin. And if you imagine yourself going down Interstate 65 miles an hour down the interstate, and all of a sudden you're facing back up the interstate as your front quarter panel right in front of you bounces off the guardrail, it's not a fun experience. I will never look at a pinball machine again after this day the same way. I feel for those pinballs now, because that's exactly what I became. My front quarter panel on the driver's side hit the guardrail. Every time I go to church now, I look for the spot where I almost died. But that wasn't enough, because that kind of ricocheted. Remember, 6,500 pounds of metal coming across the intersection in less than a second, spinning, catching that guardrail, shot me back across three lanes of traffic, and my rear end on the driver's side now hit the median strip as I continued that spin. And the concrete wall has a nice mark on for my truck. But the interesting thing that happened is I'm thinking, what is going to happen here? You know, your life really does not flash before your eyes, just in case you're wondering about that, if you think you're about to die. I never saw that. I was just trying to figure out how to get out of this. My back end hit that. It collided with that cement wall. Spun me back into driving down the driving lane like nothing happened. I turned my turn signal on, pulled over in the right hand, got off in the lane, and now I'm sitting there on the grass between the exit ramp for exit 36 and the on-ramp coming down, as if nothing had ever happened. And I sat there for a moment, I look up in my rearview mirror, and here comes a big semi-truck, and I'm thinking, he better not hit that black ice or I'm dead. So I got out, I walked around the truck, totally ignoring what happened on the driver's side, because I'm thinking, you know, I spun, I'm still trying to figure out what all happened, and I look for all this damage on the right-hand side of my truck. Absolutely nothing, not even a scratch. And I'm thinking, what just happened here? And I come back around the front of the truck, and it's like, oh, I know what happened. And there's my bumper behind my tire. I've seen that before. When they say rams are ram tough, believe it. This is the second time I've been in an accident in that truck, and it's been pretty bad both times. Person pulled out in front of me. And they are amazing. You literally just bounce off of people. And you drive, I could have driven the truck home if I didn't have to make a turn. I could literally have driven it straight, but I had this much space between the tire turning and the bumper that had come in behind it, slicing the tire open if I tried to go anywhere. But that day, my truck collided twice. And I was just going through life. I was just living life, minding my own business, driving down the road, just happened to hit a patch of black ice. And I found myself colliding. Now, there's an interesting definition to collide. Here it is. To strike one another or one against another with a forceful impact. Come into violent contact or, as in my case, crash. To clash or conflict. Their views on the matter collided. I bring this up to tell you that today I want to talk about this idea of colliding. That there are times in our lives when we collide with life. Things are going to happen as... I don't really need to say that after 2020. I just hope we get to the end of the year with more things not happening. But 2020 has been a year of collisions, hasn't it? Things that have impacted our lives this year that we would never have expected in our lifetime to experience. And yet, we still have this thing called faith and this thing called life. And from time to time, the two collide with each other. I want to talk to you first about the moment where life collides with faith. I want to take you to Luke chapter 23, and we're not using the same scripture that Pastor Jeff just read about, but we're looking at some things that parallel that. He talked about in that version there about Christ returning to heaven after the crucifixion, after the raising from the dead, after all of that happens. He goes back to heaven, he's sitting the right hand of the throne of God, and just... It's an amazing story about Christ the King and the great things that he is doing in our behalf. I want to back up a little bit because next week we're going to start way back at the beginning where we look at the expectation of the coming, the birth of Christ. But I want to take you to a tragic day in the life of the disciples found in Luke chapter 23. Here it is. It was now about the sixth hour, and darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour, for the sun had stopped shining. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And when he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, "Surely this man was a righteous man." Isn't it interesting that even in the midst of a dark moment, someone can see God's hand at work? When all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away, but all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching these things. The disciples in that moment were having a moment where life was colliding with their faith. And it was beginning to challenge their faith. Everything that they had understood, everything that they knew, everything that Jesus had taught them was disrupted in this moment. This Christ who was going to bring back heaven to earth and bring his kingdom to earth and he was going to do all these great things, all of a sudden now is dead. And life as they knew it has changed forever. Life collided with their faith. In every one of our lives, there are those moments where life collides with our faith, where the circumstances and the situations that we find ourselves in challenge us at the very core of what we believe about life and about God even. So how do we respond in those times? Well, I'm going to suggest to you that how we respond is determined by, as we talked last week, our beliefs about God. Our beliefs will determine our actions, and our actions determine the results that we get in life. So I think there were four ways that we can respond to life challenging our faith. The first one is this. We can recognize God at work in our situation. And that was that centurion that stood there, and he's in the midst of all of this, and we don't know if he was a believer, if he had faith in Christ or not. The chances are probably not, but he recognized that something was different about this man that hung on the cross. That surely, he said, he was a righteous man. I want to suggest to you that no matter what it looks like around us, God is always at work, even when we can't see it. Now, think about this past year of your life. God is sovereign. God is at work. He knows what's going to happen to us before it happens. He knew 2020 was going to happen. He knew how it was going to impact all of our lives. He knew how it was going to cause situations that we're uncomfortable with. He knew how it was going to cause loss. Loss of life, loss of jobs, change in our system of how we interact with each other. I have given more elbow bumps this year than an entire lifetime before that. You know, occasional fist bump. I can't wait to go back to the day where I can actually reach out my hand and shake somebody's hand again. You see, God knew that all this was going to happen before it ever happened. Beth and I were, my wife Beth, in case you haven't met her, her name is Beth. And everybody say, hi, Beth.
Hi.
All right, Beth, say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Okay. She's looking at me like, don't ever do that again. But as we were sitting at a pastor's and wives retreat one time, we remember a speaker saying, when nothing is happening, something is happening. And I think this year in particular, we need to remember when it seems like God is not doing anything, something is happening, because God is always at work in our situation. Today is actually in the calendar Christ the King Sunday. It's a Sunday where we celebrate and recognize Christ as King of our lives. We've given our lives to Him. He is King and Lord of our lives. We recognize His sovereignty over this earth, His sovereignty over who is in what position of a power of authority around the nations, around the world, His sovereignty of what happens in this world. We recognize His eternal nature as King, that one day He will be serving for all eternity, continue to serve for all eternity as King in our lives. There is nothing that happens to you and I that God does not know about. Let me say that again in case you really need to hear that this morning. There is nothing that happens to you and I that God does not know about. Think about that. When life collides with our faith, do we recognize that God is still at work? Jesus is dead on the cross. That's a collision. It's a collision to this new faith, this new Christianity, this new group of disciples who were giving their lives, literally walked away from everything to follow this guy around for 3.5 years. And He's promised all these things, and now He's dead. And He's hanging on a cross. Sometimes when life collides with our faith, it's hard to recognize that God is still in charge, isn't it? That God is still doing something. I want to suggest to you that there was also at work in this scene some shame, some frustration, some failure. Just think about Peter. This is the one who would be the great leader of the church who said to Jesus, I will never deny you. No matter what happens, I will never deny you. And he failed him miserably when Jesus needed him the most. And I see Peter, we read the story surrounding the crucifixion, and Peter's there close enough to keep an eye on what's going on, but far enough away not to get caught up in it and pointed out as to who he is, but it happened anyway, didn't it? And Peter, as Jesus died on the cross, is watching from a distance, I believe, filled with shame, frustration, and failure. But isn't that how we are sometimes? In our life, when life collides with faith and our faith doesn't win out, that we give in to life and we do or say something that we shouldn't have done. We react in a way that we shouldn't have done. We do things that we should not have done because our faith tells us that's not the way to handle it. And yet our reaction to life is we do it. And then we find ourselves filled with shame, frustration, and failure. I think another way to respond to life colliding with our faith is this idea of shock at what is happening. Anybody feel shocked this past year? Okay, this is a chance where I see if everybody's awake, because either you're lying or you're not listening, or we've been shocked this past year in ways that we can't even imagine. And we get shocked sometimes, like, what is happening? We ask the question that a lot of us ask, why is this happening to me? You know, as if we're the only one in the world that this is happening to. But why? I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe it's going on this long. Wait a minute, we're talking a second round that's worse than the first round, and we have to wear these things on our face longer? You know, we, many times, shock and disbelief come into play. But then I think there's one thing that we can do when life really collides with our faith that we fail to do, and I think we need to do more of in our lives, is this idea of contemplation. You see, at the end of that passage, they're standing there, all the disciples, not knowing what to expect, not seeing what they expected, actually. And they're standing there around trying to figure out what it all means. They're taking it in. They're thinking about it. Do we sometimes bypass things in life and forget to contemplate and think about and reflect upon what's happened in our lives? I think it's something that we don't do enough of in our busy culture today. One of the best things that you can do when you have a successful point in your life, if you're in business or work, or you get a promotion or something great happens, your family accomplishes something, or one of your students at home accomplishes something, you get excited about it, you say, that's great, and we move on. Instead of doing that, maybe we should hang in that moment for a little bit longer. Maybe we should hang in that moment of celebration, or in this case, when life enters in, and ask, how do we get here? What is God doing that brought us to this point? What does he want to do moving out of this point forward? You see, we rush in and out of these moments so fast that we don't take time to reflect upon it and really contemplate and see what God is doing. And life collides with our faith, and we move on until it happens again. And some things that happen in our lives, honestly, if we take time to reflect on why they happened the first time, they wouldn't repeat themselves. There's a lot of different ways to respond to life challenging our faith. So I ask you this morning, how do you respond when life catches you off guard and collides with your faith? But you see, there's this interesting part. There's life colliding with our faith, but then there are times where our faith literally collides with our lives. Where our faith, that what we say we believe, those deep core things that we hold on to, really begin to collide with life. Because aren't we as Christians, as followers of Christ, I hate using that term Christian, because everybody in America is a Christian, or it used to be. You know, I like the term Christ follower. As followers of Christ, as maybe even a deeper term, disciples of Christ, meaning we just don't follow, but we believe, and we're learning from and teaching others. As disciples of Christ, what about those times when life really conflicts with our faith? Where life comes in and the situation in life presents itself and our faith literally collides with life and we have a decision to make. Look with me to chapter 16 of Mark. We have another part of this story. When the Sabbath was over, this is after Jesus is dead and buried, he was buried right before the Sabbath. Basically, they grabbed him, threw a couple things on him, and threw him in a tomb because they had to be finished and out of there before sundown when the Sabbath set, because they didn't want to violate any of the Jewish laws. So when that's over, they're right there to finish what they didn't do properly the first time. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Now, there's some preparation here, right? They have this plan, they've got spices along, they're getting together, they're going to go do this thing properly. So very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, the first opportunity they could, they were on their way to the tomb, and they ask each other, who's going to roll the stone away from the tomb? How are we going to get into Jesus? I would have asked that question sooner personally, but they're not great planners. They're not project managers. They've got a great heart. They're out there doing it, right? And who will roll away the stone from the entrance of the tomb? Well, they get there and they find something interesting. Not a problem they have to worry about, right? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. And they entered the tomb. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said, or don't be afraid, he said. "You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene." I love that. If anybody ever asks you what's it mean to be a Nazarene, just say Jesus was one. You'll figure it out. You know, I love that when my friends that don't know anything about our church will ask the question, "Well, Jesus the Nazarene." That's where we get our name from, followers of Christ. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified, but he is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. I don't know if you're like me, but if you were in a situation like that, I think I'd be a little shaky too. I want to get out of there as quick as possible. Trembling and bewildered, they ran out and fled the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. When Jesus rose on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had driven 7 demons. She went and told the others who had been with him and who were mourning and weeping. When they heard that Jesus was alive and that she had seen him, they did what most people would do in that situation. They didn't believe it. Isn't it interesting that when God does something amazing, our first response is not to believe it, or to question it, or doubt it? They didn't believe her. Afterward, Jesus appeared in a different form to 2 of them while they were walking in the country. These returned and reported it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. Later, Jesus appeared to the 11 as they were eating. He rebuked them for their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal to believe those who had seen him after he had risen. What do we do with those times in our life when faith collides with life? Those times when we make a conscious choice to live out our faith and life seems to be in conflict with that. The disciples are going on. They're trying to make sense of all of this. They're trying to live it all out, and yet things are beginning to happen that conflict with life. That all of a sudden their faith and life are not matching up. Before it was life throwing things at faith. I want to suggest to you that many times there's a collision when faith throws things at life. This past week, I made a conscious decision, and I actually made a decision for the first time ever during this whole pandemic to post not my opinion, but my choice on Facebook. And I chose this past week to stop attending a particular gym. If you want to find out which one it is, go to my Facebook, search, find it, you'll see the post. Because I called the manager and I said, I see the sign on the door. I know what the governor told us to do and how we're supposed to interact in those settings, and you're not enforcing the masks. This isn't a choice about masks. You'll find out what my real decision is about in a moment. And he said, "That's right, because if I do that, I won't have a business." I said, "Excuse me?" I said, "Doesn't our governor and doesn't the CDC give us strict guidelines of how we're supposed to be living right now?" And he said, "No." He said, I get that, but if I enforce it, I won't have a business. I've already lost a number of people that won't come in here when we try and talk about wearing masks. I said, "But isn't it interesting that your main competitor in town," you'll find out who they are too on my Facebook page, "your main competitor in town is making people wear masks and they're growing." I said, "You're not going to do this." He said, "No." I said, "Then you can count me as one who's going to pull my membership out." And I closed out my membership. This week, I'm going to go to the other place and make sure they are, and then I'm going to go in and join. Now, here's the reason I put this on Facebook and my choice. If you were here last week, you kind of know where I'm heading with this. I posted on Facebook the decision that I made, and I said, "This is not a political statement. This is not a medical statement. This is just a choice that I have made." And a friend from high school posted immediately about the pros and cons of wearing masks and all the medical evidence and all of this. And the first thing I did is I sent him a very nice message back, and I said, "I appreciate your viewpoints. I'm not discounting your viewpoints, but I'm not going to fill up my Facebook page with the pros and cons of wearing masks. I'm not going to have that debate on my page." and that for that reason I'm hiding your post, but I really value what you said and shared as your opinion. I get that. And then I went on to say, and this is why I put it on there, I said, the reason I put my choice out here is because I am a Christian. And my Bible tells me that as a Christian, I'm supposed to follow what those in authority over me say I should do, whether I believe it or not, whether I agree with it or not. And I said, for that reason, I made this choice, not for any other reason. And it's been interesting seeing the responses to that. But I wonder how many times we make a decision or a choice based upon our faith or based upon what everybody else is saying and doing. You see, life is throwing us curveballs every day, but yet we are called to believe and live differently in this world. As followers of Christ, we're to respond differently. Our faith is going to collide with life. If we really are living this world that is separate and that is different, if we're living this life in this world, we're living a life that's separate and different. If we really believe that we are called to be in this world but not of this world, that we're really aliens living on this planet, in essence, not aliens like people, like from other planets, but aliens like people who are living in a country that's not their original origin. If we're really to live like followers of Christ who have a different home, who have a different value system, then that's going to collide with life. And we're going to have moments where our faith collides with life. Many times it's going to happen. We're going to do or say something that sets us apart from the rest of the world. And these are the times when our faith, in those moments when it's in direct conflict with what's unfolding in our lives, where we have a choice to make. And how do we respond? I think there's four ways that the disciples responded here. The first was, as many of us do, fear. Oh my goodness, what if I really stand up for what I believe in? What if I really go out there and make a public stand for my faith? What are people going to think? Some are going to like it, some are not. Some are going to agree with it, some aren't. Some are going to applaud me for my values, and some are going to belittle me for my values. If I really put out there what I think and really stand up for God, what's that going to cost me? And so if our faith is really going to collide with life, and it will, are we ready ahead of time to take that stand when we need to? Or do we just let life win out? I think there was another thing that was brought out in this passage with these women and the disciples, and their, not just their fear, but their confusion. This isn't happening the way it's supposed to. This isn't working out the way it was supposed to. I wasn't supposed to go there and find an angel. I was supposed to go and find a dead body of my friend. I'm still trying to figure that part out. And now all of a sudden there's this angel sitting there, and he said, go tell people that he's not here and he's not there. I've seen that, but it doesn't make any sense. And they were confused and bewildered, as the verse that we read put it. A lot of times when our faith is in direct conflict with the life that we live, with the things in life, there's confusion. How do we make sense of this? How do we reconcile this? How do we bring this together in a way that makes sense? But yet my faith is different than life many times. Well, sometimes we just have lack of faith. I know, God, that you could heal me of this, but I don't know that you will for me. I've heard your stories. I've seen you do it for other people, but I don't know that you could do that for me. I'm not quite sure of this situation, this circumstance, and how it's all going to play out. I know you're a great God. I know this is Christ the King Sunday. I know you're sovereign, but I don't know if you're going to do that for me. So we're leery of taking a stand for our faith because we are a little fearful, we're a little confused, and so our lack of faith starts seeping up to the forefront. Well, what was the other thing that they faced? Even when they were confronted with God at work, there was disbelief. So many times we just don't believe that God's promises really will play out for us. We don't believe that that the things God says he will do, he will do. Or the things that we've seen him do in other people's lives, these great movements of God that have happened from time to time all throughout history, there's no way that can really be God at work because it's different than my experience of God. And what did we say last week? Different experiences begin to shape our belief system, which begins to change our actions, which yields new results in our lives. Maybe God at work in certain areas is a way for us to experience him in a way we've never experienced him. And instead of disbelief, maybe we should look and say, is this really God at work? If it is, what can I learn from it? Because my faith will collide with my life from time to time. The interesting thing about all of this, whether it's faith colliding with life or life colliding with faith, there is also a third moment that we have, and that's the moment of decision. It's the time where we have a choice to make and what we're going to do with what we're dealing with. My wife and I both wear Fitbits. I don't know if you can see this out there, since it's a great way to wear black and gray on a day that you have something black you want to show people. But anybody else out there wear a Fitbit? All right. What will happen in about 4 minutes on your Fitbit? Your wrist is going to go, right? Fitbits are designed that 9 times throughout the day, they are challenging you to win the hour. And the beauty of it is they will tell you, after your wrist vibrates, it will tell you how many steps you have to make to have walked 250 steps that hour. And it keeps track. It's not just enough to remind you. It's basically saying, get up and walk around. You've been too sedentary for a while. Get up and walk around because I want you to win this hour. And so right now we're in the 11 o'clock, the 11 a.m. hour, and I'm hoping that walking back and forth across this platform will get me that 250 steps so my wrist will not go in about 3 minutes, and I will have to walk back and forth for the next 5 minutes while I preach. So we have this, but it happens 9 hours out of the day. So you've got not just this win this hour, you've got this constant reminder for 9 hours out of your day, and it keeps track. It's amazing. It's your conscience on your wrist. It keeps track of how many times that day, and at the end of the day, you get a little report on your watch. It tells you how many hours you won today, how many choices you made to get up and move today, how many decisions that you made that were in line with your goals for your health that you made today. And if that's not bad enough, did you know that Fitbit can also send you a weekly report? It will tell you at the end of the week how well you did all week long, and it will show you day by day whether or not you've won the hour, moment by moment. In each of our lives, there are those moments, moments that we must decide that we will live out our faith, moments when we decide that when life and faith collide, faith will win the hour. It's interesting that all throughout Scripture, God is telling us over and over what it means to be a Christ follower. Listen to these words from Matthew 25. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." But then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me." And we're reminded once again that in those moments, day in, day out, that we're to care for those in need. It's one of those things that we're told in the Scripture. How do we do that today? How do we do that in this pandemic world? When faith and life collide, and when life and faith collide, how do we live that out? You see, we're struggling with that, aren't we, as a Christian church, as individual churches, but we're struggling with that. We're called to reach the world for Christ, but how do you do that when you can't even give a handshake or a hug? How do you meet the need of the person that you come in contact with when you can't do some of the basic ways of meeting those needs? I want to suggest to you that right now, life and faith are in conflict. There's collisions happening. And I think there's collisions that are happening faster and faster. And I think one of the decisions that we need to make is, first of all, I'm going to figure out how to make it meet a need. And secondly, how do I do that? You see, in spite of what's going on around us, we are still the church. In the midst of a pandemic, we are still the church. In the midst of rioting and racial issues being tearing up our country, we are still the church with the message of reconciliation. In the midst of what you face this week in going to work, or maybe not going to work, maybe having lost your job, maybe trying to figure out how you work in this new virtual environment, we are still the church. And we've got to figure out how to win the hour. Life and faith will collide. It's a given. There's an interesting quote by Irwin McManus. He says this: one of the reasons that we're unprepared for the moment before us is that we're stuck in a moment behind us. How many of you are still stuck in post-pandemic or pre-pandemic life? You see, we can approach this pandemic a couple of different ways. One is to say, I can't wait till this is over. I can't take anymore. And we continue to go on in living, trying to get back what we once had. Another way is to say, in the midst of this pandemic life, what can I do? How can I adjust? Life and faith have collided. For how long, we don't know. There are some bright hope things right around the corner, but we don't know. And instead of living in the past, we need to learn how to relive in the present and figure out how to be the church and how to be the follower of Christ that he's called us to be, because none of that has changed. None of our faith principles have changed. There's just a different life that we've got to figure out how to live them in. And when this season is over, and this is a season, when this season is over, what will we have learned from it? What decisions will we have made? What will we continue on as and go back to life as it was before? No. Please don't think you can do that. We are forever changed because of the events of 2020. Our country will never go back to what it once was. And it shouldn't, and we shouldn't. We need to win the moments going forward. We need to make the decisions, not by living in the past, but taking advantage of the moments before us, because life and faith will continue to collide. They'll just collide in different ways. That was a point and a time to say amen. They will collide in different ways, unless you want the pandemic to continue, which I don't think you do. But life and faith will collide. One of the other things that Irwin McManus said is this: our choices either move us toward God and all the pleasure that comes within him, or steer us away from him to a life of shame and fear. Are you allowing the difficulties of life, those collision moments, to draw you closer to God? Because you're relying on him to get you through those, relying on him to help you understand all of that? You're making the choice to be with him through it? Or are you allowing it to push you further away from him? I wish that I could share with you everything that I've learned through the pandemic. I wish I could say where I'm at today is where I was at in March and nothing's changed. But I'll tell you, if I was honest, back in March, if you want to know the truth, just ask my wife. We were having arguments about the different things that were coming out. I was getting mad at the TV, and we stopped watching the TV for a while because, you see, We're on a growth process. And I am different today than I was 8 months ago. And you are too. So when those moments of faith and life collisions happen, how will you decide to respond? In those moments when faith and life collide, how do you respond to God? Do you respond with fear and confusion, or with trust and hope? We're heading into the Advent season. You'll be receiving a gift this week. It will include a devotional guide. And we're going to follow that in our Sunday school class, in our Sunday school hour. We're going to follow that in your daily devotions if you choose to follow along with that. I hope each of you will. We're going to follow that in our sermons, and we're going to look forward to the coming of Christ and the hope that he brings with it. This Christmas is going to look different. It's already looking different for our family. If our Christmas celebration is always everybody come to our house, we've already had members that said, I can't make it because of the circumstances. It's going to be different, but the same God of hope, the same God of a future is still here. And this Advent season, I think we're going to be depending on him more and more than we ever have before, because he is our hope, he is our future. The king still sits on the throne. He's not surprised by any of this. And what he's looking for is people that will choose to win the hour when life and faith collide.